get up and we watch Eric Garner strangled by a mob. Strangled by a mob, and we sit up and act as if we are normal. A grandfather who will never see his grandchildren again, who will never enjoy those things again, and we look at him like it's something wrong with us. There is nothing wrong with us. There is something wrong with this.
They shot my brother last night. He was supposed to be at my graduation. I've been trying to pray away the taste of his last I love you. They never mourned his innocence. Don't they know that he too is American? That he is a gangster who spoke Langston Hughes, who spoke hood, who became brown boy on gray pavement.
We gon' fight! From everywhere that we are. From Washington, D.C. to Chicago, to all over this country, we are gonna fight for what we believe in. That's why we are here.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the studios of WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam. Well, in the week after three black men were shot to death by police, the Black Lives Matter movement is the only movement that is standing between our lives and the normalization of our murder. If there is no protest, then our murder is normal and it is normalized. Yet these very protesters, all peaceful, are attacked viciously in Baton Rouge for our truth-telling, for raising our voices against our slaughter. According to one published report, protesters were violently attacked and arrested, assault weapons pointed at them with fingers on the triggers, some dragged across the cement, their clothes ripped off. Multiple journalists were arrested. Several demonstrators reported the police pointing machine guns directly at them. And at one point, the Baton Rouge Police Department even used an armored military vehicle to physically push protesters back. We'll be speaking about these issues with author and activist Gerald Horn later in the show in this month's edition of The F Word. And also hear from the Brave New Voices International Youth Poetry Slam underway now at the Kennedy Center. But first, our headlines. As the nation and world still reeled from Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, and Delron Small being shot to death by police at point-blank range, teachers, parents, and community organizers gathered here in D.C. for the People's March for Public Education and Social Justice. The coalition supports full, equitable funding for all public schools, safe, racially just schools and communities, community leadership in public school policies, professional diverse educators for all students, child-centered culturally appropriate curriculum for all, and no high-stakes standardized testing. For those gathered, education issues were linked to the issue of continued murder of innocent black people at the hands of the police. 12-year-old Ashawn Johnson of Chicago, who became an activist when Mayor Rahm Emanuel shut down 50 public schools in that city, addressed those gathered at the Lincoln Memorial.
All the organizations and grassroots organizations in Chicago have been fighting and fighting and has a struggle and have everything that we need. We are fighting for each other. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. My great-grandfather fought for that school. My great-grandfather was here when we was on the 50th month of the anniversary. He was here. He was here. He was here. He fought. And now to hear that our black lives are dying, to see that they're getting shot by police brutality, to see that I don't even know if I can make it past the age that I am with everything that's happened. To see that, it's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. I just want y'all to know that and we gon' fight. From everywhere that we are. From Washington, D.C. to Chicago. To all over this country. We are gonna fight for what we believe in. That's why we are here. This is a revolution, and we gonna make it a revolution because black lives matter. I want everybody to put their fist up, and I want everybody
That was 12-year-old Ashawn Johnson speaking at the People's March for Public Education and Social Justice at the Lincoln Memorial. On Saturday at Howard University, community organizer Jitu Brown, also of Chicago, drew the connection between those in the Save Our Schools Coalition and the movement for Black Lives.
White supremacy operates as a virus that seeps and infects every quality of life institution we have access to. So somebody wants to get credit? Nah. Somebody wants to get a house? Nah. Somebody wants to find a decent job or join a trade union? Nah. Somebody wants to have a decent school? Nah. Somebody wants to have a hospital in their neighborhood? Nah. There's a trust that has been betrayed in this country because nobody has been more loyal to this than the people that are often the most shunned. We fought in every war. We fought in every conflict. We've invested in this system. We've often been the moral center of this country. But we are the most demonized. Black bodies being shown on TV for the world to laugh at is as common as somebody coughing. We sit up and we watch Eric Garner strangled by a mob. Strangled by a mob. And we sit up and act as if we are normal. A grandfather who will never see his grandchildren again, who will never enjoy those things again, and we look at him like there's something wrong with us. There is nothing wrong with us. There is something wrong with this. Y'all have to forgive me. I can't even go off. Y'all have to forgive me. Because I can't look at people die and act like it's just an issue. I can't do it. I can't look at people die and act like it's just a footnote in a news story. My humanity won't let me do it.
Hundreds of people from around the country attended the weekend action. The coalition maintains an online presence at SaveOurSchoolsMarch.org. Special thanks to Vincent Precht and SchoolhouseLive.org for their audio feed. On the Ground was also able to speak to black farmers gathered outside the Supreme Court to protest what they say is unremitting discrimination from the United States Department of Agriculture. A complaint filed at the Supreme Court during last Friday's rally is regarding Eddie and Dorothy Wise, farmers from North Carolina who were foreclosed on and evicted from their 106-acre farm on January 20th of this year by 14 militarily armed federal marshals and several Nash County, North Carolina deputy sheriffs, without ever being granted a hearing. The Wises are challenging the USDA's longstanding practice of denying black farmers a formal hearing before the administrative law judge. Michael Byfield filed this report.
I'm Michael Byfield here for Pacifica, Washington, D.C. On the Ground Show, and I'm with one of the black farmers out here making a statement. Kevin, could you please introduce yourself there?
Yes, sir. I'm Kevin Poole, president of the Pennsylvania Black Farmers outside of Philadelphia and to Pine Forge.
And Kevin, why are you here today?
Well, we decided to come here today because President Slaughter, our president of the American Agricultural Association, called us to come down here and protest in front of the Supreme Court to let them know that we as black farmers and Americans are not being treated fairly. In regards to the Pickford settlement, regards to access to the Farm Service Agency committees and lending and loaning money. And we are at a great disadvantage with land loss that's going on all across the country affecting black American farmers.
You know, following the Shirley Sherrod situation with the Obama administration,
yes,
6 or 7 years ago, most Americans felt that something would have been done by now, and were under the impression that following the Pickford settlement, that black farmers were being taken care of. But from my understanding, you were saying very different.
No. When those incidents happened, besides rampant efforts to disqualify black farmers, even in the late filing process, I mean, this thing was a scam. I think President Obama had a good heart to sign off on the bill, but in its entirety, there were people working against him in the administration. And the Minority Affairs of the Civil Rights Division is saying, well, white women can meet that standard. of the affirmative action guidelines. And therefore, everyone else is continually eliminated, put down, shut out.
Thank you very much. That was Kevin Poole, a black farmer from Pennsylvania, that's here in front of the Supreme Court for Underground Show. This is Michael Byfield.
In planet and sustainability news, organizations such as Food and Water Watch are asking the public to contact the White House today and urge President Obama to veto the so-called DARK Act, which they say will leave consumers in the dark about whether or not their food contains genetically modified ingredients. The legislation allows food producers to choose how they want to disclose the presence of genetically modified ingredients. Under the legislation, manufacturers will be able to use text, symbols, or a QR code that consumers must scan with a smartphone to relay the information. The new rules have been pushed for by companies including Monsanto, Walmart, and groups including the National Corn Growers Association. Ronnie Cummins, International Director of Organic Consumers Association, said that the bill was written, bought, and paid for by corporations who clearly have something to hide. He also said replacing clear on-package labels with a system that is convoluted, inconvenient, and discriminates against the elderly, the poor, and anyone without a smartphone or internet access is inexcusable, especially when consumers in 64 other countries have the right to that same information. Polls indicate that the majority of Americans support labeling of GMOs. There's more happening in the Gulf of Mexico. Newly released federal documents reveal that the U.S. has approved fracking offshore, leading to billions of gallons of wastewater being dumped at sea. The Center for Biological Diversity says that officials approved fracking in 630 different wells in the 4 years between 2010 and 2014 in the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf has already been suffering from decades of conventional oil and gas drilling, as well as the aftermath of the devastating Deepwater Horizon blowout in 2010, when millions of gallons of oil were spilled. The newly released documents reveal that fracking occurred off the coasts of Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama with no public involvement and with no site-specific tests undertaken beforehand. In doing so, the industry was also allowed to dump a staggering 76 billion gallons of waste fluid into the sea in 2014 alone. There's better news off the coast of New York State, where a 15-turbine wind farm was approved by Long Island Power Authority off the coast of eastern Long Island. Clean energy activists say that this approval opens the door for a possible larger wind farm and local New York jobs. A New York utility plans to buy 90 megawatts from the offshore wind farm of up to 1,000 megawatts that Providence-based Deepwater Wind is planning to build in Rhode Island Sound. The Long Island Power Authority's board of directors at its meeting is expected to approve an agreement to purchase the power output of 15 wind turbines from the project. The utility's chief executive officer told the Associated Press. The turbines would be installed as part of the first phase of the Deepwater One project, the largest offshore wind farm proposed in the United States, which could have as many as 200 wind turbines when it's completed. The U.S. lags behind Europe and others in development of offshore wind energy. Many wind farms in Europe are already producing hundreds of megawatts of power. The U.S. has seen other proposals for big offshore wind farms, but so far the only one under construction is Deepwater Wind's 30-megawatt demonstration project off Block Island, Rhode Island. That will be the first offshore wind farm in the nation. The pact between the Long Island Power Authority and Deepwater Wind would mark the first time a New York utility has agreed to buy power from an offshore wind farm. Now here in D.C., neighbors in Lincoln Park and across D.C. actually are forming a co-op with the help of D.C. Sun to make it easier to save money on the purchase of solar panels and build a community interested in solar. D.C. Sun is encouraging interested energy consumers to join them at information sessions to learn more about solar energy and how co-ops simplify the process of going solar while providing a discount through bulk purchasing power. And finally, in our culture and media moment, lots happening. The new Ghostbusters movie is out. The third annual Raw Food Festival happens starting Saturday, tomorrow, July 16th, from 3:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Emergence Community Arts Collective, 733 Euclid in Northwest D.C. Dick Gregory is speaking tomorrow, Saturday, 7 p.m., on the topic of assassination or natural death at the Forest Park Senior Center, 4801 Liberty Heights Avenue in Baltimore, Maryland. And Brave New Voices International Youth Slam Festival is underway through tomorrow, Saturday, at the John F. Kennedy Center, the Concert Hall at 2700 F Street Northwest. And more than 550 outspoken youth poets from around the world are here in the nation's capital, redefining what it means to be an American in the 21st century. Tomorrow, Saturday's activities are Fife is Living from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Marvin Gaye Park in Northeast D.C., and the Brave New Voices Grand Slam Finals are at 6 p.m. at the Concert Hall at the Kennedy Center. Well, those are headlines and happenings. When we come back, Brave New Voices at the Kennedy Center, and in the second half, Gerald Horn joins us. Stay with us.
Since a youngin', I was dreamin' of getting rich. Look at me, fantasize about a white picket fence. It's a tree. Used to want a pathfinder with some tents. That's all I need. Those 20s on that bitch and get it rinsed. But now I see my nigga that the world's a lot bigger ever since. Picked up the paper and they say, nigga, Eddie caught a body, I'm convinced. Anybody is a killer, all you gotta do is push them to the limits. I write a story, can I get a glimpse? And can I get a glimpse? Last night I had a bad dream that I was trapped in the city. Then I asked, is that really such a bad thing? They robbing niggas on the daily, can you blame them? That ain't ever had things. Guess not. Last night, they put up on my at the light like, nice watch. Run it. Hands in the air now. Hands in the air. Run it. Hands in the air now. Hands in the air. Run it. Hands in the air now. Hands in the air. Hands in the air now. Hands in the air. Smart.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask if your country is your country. Ask if your country belong to your country folk. Ask if your country addicted to blood. Ask if your country addicted to forgetting. Ask if your country an oil and power fiend. Ask if your country shake at night, starving for bodies. If bodies mean your country, get to keep on being your country in the same old way. Ask if your country is built on stolen land and stolen breath. Ask if democracy is a chain tight as skin around your neck. Ask if your comfort means that elsewhere someone is burying a daughter. Ask if your comfort means that round the corner a man is dead because a cop mistook his body for a gun. Ask if your comfort mean broke schools and food deserts on the other side of town. Ask if your new apartment used to belong to someone who couldn't afford to look like you. Ask yourself if all the things you're scared to admit are shovels slowly filling a brown boy's throat, too. All lives don't matter the same as all lives. Some lives matter only to ourselves. Some lives matter only in they hood. Some lives matter of fact, and some lives up for debate. All lives matter to somebody, but what about this life of mine? Honey-colored and black as it is, what my life mean to you? Am I talking to you? Do you wish me justice, or do you just wish I would just shut up already? Vanish already. 3. Diamond Reynolds is a hero where no one should have to be a hero. Steady as she be with daughter in the back seat and Philando slowly becoming a memory right next to her, gun still pointed at his body, cop outside the window scared of a man he already proved to be a myth, thinking him zombie when he already imagined him ghost. See, Diamond be Diamond strong in a world that treat our people like bad water. Diamond unbreakable, but why they test her like that? Why they send bullets through our bodies like they trying to see if we real or just a bad dream? Why they nightmare us into beast? Why they comfort the cops and not the families? Why administrative leave? Why they look up the record before they check the pulse? Why they spin the story before they call the ambulance? Why they more worried about getting caught than they worried about the killing? Why they protect and serve themselves from us? Why they want us to apologize for being in the way of their guns? What good is police? What is the American dream to a brown person except the dream of America leaving us alone? For I don't want America no more. I want to be a citizen of something new. I want a country happy for the immigrant hero. I want a country where joy is indigenous as its people. I want a country that keep its word. I want to not be scared to drink the water. I want a country that don't bomb other countries. I want a country that don't treat its people like a virus. I want a country not trying to cure itself of me. I want a country that treat my mama right. I want a land where my sister can be free. I want a country that don't look at me and my man and think about where and how we should burn. I want a nation. I want a nation under a kinder God. I want justice, the verb, not justice, the dream. I want what was promised to me. I want 40 acres and a vote that matters. I want no more prisons and a mule. I want all lives to actually matter. I want to be over race, but race ain't over me. I want peace. I want equity. I want guns melted into a mosque or a church or a place for us to pray. And I want to stop praying for my country to be mine. For it to put the gun down, to take the bomb back. 5. Hope is hard. But I have it. I look at my students' hands and imagine all that they will mother. Christ, O name I was raised to pray to. O Allah, sweet Lord of my father. Oh, all you gods of the homies and all the gods of strangers, work together. Build us into tools to build anything other than this world. Make us so that we may make us a world we can be grateful for and not grateful in spite of. Let us not be idle or stunned by fear. Let us not be so comfortable that we ignore another's grieving instead of ending what makes her grieve. Let us not be scared of the work because it's hard. Let us move the mountain because the mountain must be moved. Let us, O Lords above us and within, let us be useful to our neighbors and tender their wounds. Let us be more bandage than blade, unless the blade is needed. Let us be a sword against whatever does not bring us closer to home. Let us be dangerous to all that has failed us, and bring us a world that is good to us. All of us. All us. All us. Amen.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard Donez Smith, a poet reciting at Brave New Voices International Youth Poetry Slam Festival, which is underway through tomorrow, Saturday, July 16th, here in D.C. at the Kennedy Center. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org. When we come back, this month's installment of the F-Word with Professor Gerald Horn. Stay with us.
See what key I want to do to them. Everybody knows that they're guilty. Everybody knows that they've lied. Everybody knows that they're guilty. Resting on their conscience, eating their inside. It's freedom. Said it's freedom time now. It's freedom. Said it's freedom time now. Time to get free. Or give yourselves up now. It's freedom.
Said it's freedom time. Yo, there's a war in the mind over territory for the dominion. Who will dominate the opinion? Schisms and isms, keeping us in forms of religion, conforming our vision to the world church's decision, trapped in a section, submitted to committee election, moral infection, epidemic lies and deception, insurrection of the highest possible order, distort, and I take recorders from hearing like underwater, beyond the borders, find ascending disorder, bound by the strategy of systemic depravity, heavy as gravity, head first in the cavity, without a bottom, a fate worse than Sodom. What's got them drunk off the spirits? Truth comes, we can't hear it when you've been programmed to fear it. I had a vision, I was falling in indecision, appalling, calling religion some program on television. How can dominant wisdom be recognized in a system of antichrists and majority rules, intelligent fools? PhDs in illusion, masters of mass confusion, bachelors of past delusion. Now who you choosing? The head of the tail, the bloodshed of the male, or confidence in the veil? Conferences at Yale, discussing doctrines of bail, causing people to fail, keeping the third in jail. His word is nailed, everything to the tree, severing all of me from all that I used to be. Formless and void, totally paranoid, enjoy darkness as Lord, keeping me from the sword. Blocked from mercy, bitter than Circe, hungry and thirsty for good meat, we would eat and still dine at the table of deceit. How incomplete, from confrontation to retreat, we belong to true enemies' defeat, destitute and necessity.
If you're just tuning in, that was Lauryn Hill on the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, from the studios of WPFW Pacifica Radio. I'm Esther Averam. Well, the horrific deaths of Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, and Delron Small, shot to death by police at point blank range, still resonate more than a week later. And their deaths, as heinous as they are bringing other issues to the fore. And with me to continue to help us unpack these issues is the writer and activist Gerald Horn, professor of history and African American studies at the University of Houston, whose most recent books are Paul Robeson, The Artist as Revolutionary, and Confronting Black Jacobins, The United States, The Haitian Revolution, and The Origins of the Dominican Republic. Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning to you.
I'm glad that you could join me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, we haven't really spoken since these three shootings, but I know you have spoken about the Second Amendment in relationship to these cases. This week, as Black Lives Matter protesters were attacked by the police in Baton Rouge and witnesses were detained and abused there, it looks like we need to look at the First and Fourth Amendments too. This week has reminded me of one conversation we had when you said, I'm paraphrasing, that the basic citizenship of African Americans is still being disputed in this century. You know, is that what we're seeing?
I think so. There was an interesting article in the New York Times a few days ago about the attempt to apply Wahhabi Islam, a doctrine that developed centuries ago, to modern-day Saudi Arabia. And as I was reading that article, I was thinking, well, the United States is in a similar dilemma because it's trying to apply a constitution developed in the late 18th century to contemporary issues when we all know that that constitution did not apply to people of African descent, nor did it apply to Native Americans. You mentioned the Second Amendment. Certainly, enslaved Africans had no Second Amendment rights. In fact, the Second Amendment, as I've talked about previously, was devised in part to suppress revolts of the enslaved, well-ordered militias, that term from the Second Amendment, and the right to bear arms was an attempt to galvanize the settler population to squash slave revolts. And likewise, if you sold weapons to Native Americans, that was akin to a capital offense. And yet, somehow blithely, we assume that this 18th century doctrine and its principles can be applied easily in 2016, which is like saying that the principles of apartheid enunciated in August 1948, designed to uplift the European settler population, could easily be applied to Nelson Mandela post-1948. I mean, it's laughable and ridiculous.
So according to the ACLU, down in Baton Rouge, peaceful protesters were violently attacked and arrested. Assault weapons were pointed at them with fingers on the triggers. Some protesters were dragged across the cement, their clothes ripped off of them. Multiple journalists were arrested. Several demonstrators reported the police pointing machine guns directly at them. And at one point, the Baton Rouge Police Department even used an armored military vehicle to physically push protesters back. And, you know, is there any precedent for this type of police terror, really, before Ferguson?
Well, I'm afraid so. I mean, if you look at the way that revolts of the enslaved were enacted in this country over the decades and centuries, you get a glimpse of what's going on today. In terms of this orgy of violence that you just made reference to, I should also underscore what happened to Micah X. Johnson, the accused assailant in the killing of five Dallas police officers. You know, of course, that he was subject to a kind of drone warfare. That is to say, a robot delivered an explosive device to him and killed him. This blurs the line between warfare and policing, and that's precisely what you've been seeing in Baton Rouge, also blurring the line between warfare and policing. I think it's probably inevitable that if you're going to have drone warfare in Afghanistan and in Northern Africa, you're going to have it on these shores eventually. I think that that helps to reinforce the idea that all of us have to be anti-war activists in order to save our own skins.
So it seems that police continue to kill with impunity. The only arrests that I can think of so far have been in Baltimore, and those cases have been difficult to prosecute. I had an interview last week with an attorney based in Baltimore, and she talked about how the prosecutor has been relying on police as witnesses, and that has been perhaps one flaw in her strategy. But the state's attorney is pressing on there, Marilyn Mosby. But what about this impunity? You know, people are seeing in case after case where police aren't even arrested. We have video of people being shot at point blank range. They're unarmed. They have no weapons in their hand. They're posing no danger, but police aren't even being arrested. Do you, because I know you're a voracious reader, how can this be addressed?
Well, it's going to be very difficult, because we've allowed certain political muscles to atrophy over the recent decades, in part because we were seduced with the idea post-Brown versus Board of Education that we were being accorded a form of citizenship. Actually, we were being accorded a form of second-class citizenship, a promotion from third-class citizenship, if you like. And we allowed our contacts and alliances in the international community to atrophy and wither. But that's precisely what we have to revive and resuscitate. Now, there have been some moves in that direction. You know that after Michael Brown, the Ferguson, Missouri teenager, was slain in 2014, his parents went to Geneva, the Human Rights Commission, to help to beat the drums right on his behalf. And, of course, UN teams have been coming across the Atlantic repeatedly in recent months, including on the question of reparations, by the way. But it's not enough. I mean, we also need to be reaching out to the African Union, to the Caribbean community. We need a full court press with regard to the international community, because I'm sure you saw that article in the New York Times yesterday about the disaffected Euro-American voters who plan to vote for Donald J. Trump because they want their country back. This does not bode well for the rest of us.
Well, I finally finished reading William Shirer's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and which I read to help me understand more of the history in these discussions I have about fascism, proto-fascism, pre-fascism on the show. And there are like these pivotal occurrences with the rise of the Nazi Party, you know, and during these times, rights of citizens were taken away slowly, sometimes very quickly, so that dissent was made illegal. And when I think about the police state that we seem to be living in addition to the spread of the surveillance state, I feel like, having just read that book, that I'm seeing these steps being taken here, that Black people are serving, in some sense, as a canary in the coal mine. You know, our rights are violated first, that we can be killed with impunity. But, you know, from your reading and of history and just observations, what do you say about that?
Well, I think that you're on the money. And I also think that, for example, we all know that Hillary Rodham Clinton is no prize with her neoliberal policies. But at the same time, we also know that if Donald J. Trump is elected with his neo-fascist policies, that he will be unable to enact many of his signature promises, for example, building a wall along the Mexican border, or ousting those who were here without papers, or somehow suppressing Muslim visitors to the United States. And so what he'll have to do to help to slake the thirst of his most avid supporters is to engage in ever more repressive measures against political dissidents on these shores. And that, of course, does not bode well for Pacifica, does not bode well for WPFW, and it does not bode well for yourself and myself.
So we are approaching in a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, on August 9th, the second anniversary of Michael Brown's death at the hands of Darren Wilson. And, you know, it took him I don't know if he ever filed a report after, like a police report immediately after killing Michael Brown. And I remember weeks had gone on and there seemed to be like this issue where people were waiting for this report. And it seems like right now the Black Lives Matter movement is the only thing, I said this at the top of the show, the only thing standing between civilization, really, you know, our lives and the normalization of our murder. You know, it seems to me if there's no protest, then it's normal, like it's okay. Yet these protesters are being targeted as being illegal.
Well, you have a fair point with regard to Black Lives Matter. I mean, certainly they're a hope for the future. I think you should also realize that on the White House website as we speak is a petition with thousands of signatures calling upon the U.S. government to declare Black Lives Matter to be a terrorist organization. I'm sure you paid attention to the remarks of former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who spoke in similar terms just a few days ago,
right. And
also got in a dig at the Black family by saying that we're not raising our children in an appropriate manner, which is one of the roots of the problem, according to Mayor Giuliani. Obviously, these are rather unfortunate comments, to put it mildly, and certainly Black Lives Matter needs maximum support at this dire moment. And I would also say, for those who are listening in the international community, that it particularly needs maximum support from our friends and allies abroad.
Well, speaking of Giuliani and politicians, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, the Democratic National Committee, their conventions are coming up. The first one in Cleveland next week, and the Democrats in Philadelphia the week after. And what do you expect to happen at these conventions? How do you expect the issues that we're discussing to be reflected in what goes on?
Well, the RNC, as you know, begins in a few days. It'll apparently be a parade of celebrities and failed politicians and B-list actors going across the stage and speaking to a U.S. audience. I expect there to be a coronation for Donald J. Trump and his presumed vice presidential nominee, Michael Pence, the governor of Indiana, a flaming homophobe. I also think that there will be attacks on BLM, Black Lives Matter. Donald J. Trump has already indicated that he plans to do so. Once again, I think that the only response can be a spirited and militant protest in Cleveland that helps to make sure that the Republican leadership knows that they're in for a fight if they want a fight.
And I guess when I'm thinking about the Republican National Committee, their convention in particular, and I think about the role of the media, in addition to Giuliani's hateful, racist comments and Trump's continuing comments in the same vein, Fox News actually has been beating the drum around Black Lives Matter, comparing them to the Ku Klux Klan, drumming up this idea that they are violent when these are peaceful protesters, basically protesting against violence, protesting for survival, protesting against state violence. So the media seems to be playing a larger-than-life role here.
Well, particularly Fox, which, of course, as you know, has this sexual harassment suit that's been filed by Gretchen Carlson, a former anchor on Fox News, which is causing many women at that network to come out of the shadows and testify with regard to an astonishing and actually obnoxious form of sexual harassment that has bedeviled that channel for years previously. Thinking about Black Lives Matter, I've been also thinking about the fact that this organization is decentralized. And I think that in part it's a response to the political moment, that is to say the Occupy movement was also decentralized. But also I think it's a response to political repression, because ordinarily what happens with progressive and strong political movements is that the U.S. ruling elite attacks the center. It attacks the leadership. It attacks the organizing committee on the premise that if you can destroy the head, the body will soon follow. But since Black Lives Matter is decentralized and there is no actual center in the ordinary terms in which we speak, it becomes difficult for that repressive strategy to follow. At the same time, I do think that ultimately, if we're going to have an effective fight back against this level of repression, there's going to have to be some sort of national coordination. There's going to have to be some sort of national convention. There are going to have to be some sort of national directives, particularly if we're going to have outreach in the international community. It seems to me that's the dilemma that BLM is facing right now.
Speaking of leaders being targeted, I don't know if you saw that there were particular people chosen, picked out of the demonstrations in Baton Rouge for, I guess, harassment to be detained. One of those people was DeRay McKesson, who's been an activist since the early, you know, at least since the early days of Ferguson. And he has a national profile. He ran for mayor in Baltimore. And there was a picture of him being detained. His shirt, I guess, had been ripped off of him. One report said that he was told by police that there were certain people that were flagged to be detained. So when you talked about people being picked off and targeted, it made me think of that. Even though he is not any like a national leader over all of Black Lives Matter, he does have a following, and he does he's out there making noise. So the last time we spoke, I think we were talking about Brexit and talked about how, for example, there was this recent New York Times poll here about how white voters are gravitating toward Trump. And in Europe, we have something similar, which I suppose will be even exacerbated given last night's attack in Nice, France, by this person driving a bus and mowing down at least 80 people. But when we talked about Brexit, you said that it could mark the end of this like 500-year nightmare, and I assume of slavery, colonialism, neocolonialism, that has so impacted people of color around the globe. But it seems that with every terrorist attack like the one last night, it's not it's not necessarily that, you know, people who are uneducated in this country and in Europe will suddenly own up and say, you know, this is just Empire's twilight. You know, this is just blowback. You know, look what we did in Iraq. Look what we did. We're doing in Yemen. Look what we've done in Syria. Look what we've done in Libya. And it's as if that memory of that 500-year period is lost on people who aren't educated.
Well, that's a fair point, but you have to keep in mind that the birth, any birth, but particularly the birth of a new international order, will not be without pain and trauma. And I do think that those voters in Britain who voted for Brexit, motivated by an anti-immigrant virus, already they're having second thoughts and third thoughts. You know, I'm sure, about the regrets movement. They're regretting that particular vote. And I do think that there are going to be difficult times ahead for Great Britain. Some of the cities in Britain that were the major recipients of European Union funding voted for Brexit and now are wondering what their destiny and fate and future will be when those European Union funds are cut off. With regard to the attack in Nice last night, I think it's past time for President Hollande of France to follow through on what he's been suggesting in recent months, which is France needs a basic reorientation of its foreign policy. He needs to dump this antiquated idea of getting rid of President al-Assad in Syria and instead join with Russia and Iran to help to squash the religious zealots on the Syria-Iraqi border. Already, you see Turkey has been moving in that direction of late, and even Secretary of State John Kerry was in Moscow just yesterday, supposedly proposing similar ideas to President Putin and his team. I think that this notion that Brexit may mark the end of an entire historical epic, I think it still has resonance. I mean, there are a number of chapters yet to be written, but certainly Britain is going to have a very difficult road ahead. I mean, for example, it's apparent that there are some in London who feel that Britain can be an offshore spearhead against the European Union, perhaps assisted by Washington. But I don't think that's going to work very well when they try to work out their divorce terms from the EU itself. And in any case, as Britain recedes into the twilight, it's going to be very difficult for British-imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe to be carried forward, not least EU-imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe, which, of course, came at the hand and behest of London. So there are many details to work out, but quite frankly, I'm rather bullish on the future right now.
So we also, when we were talking about international issues, talked about Venezuela. And since then, I actually went to a celebration of Venezuela's 205 years of independence. And I was meant to actually bring some sound from that, but maybe I will in coming weeks. And speaking to Carlos Ron from the Venezuelan embassy here, he also talked about how there were a lot of other updates there that weren't getting press here. For example, the electrical emergency had passed. And even though there were a lot of stories about the crisis with the electricity, I don't really see corresponding stories or follow-up stories saying that, you know, the crisis has ended. He also sent me information about people kind of dealing with the food issues in terms of starting urban farms and non-urban farms and how this issue of scarcity of food was like one of those stories kind of whipped up by the Western media that really aren't discussed in terms of other countries that are really actually hungry, you know. But that's one of those stories in terms of the global Black Lives Matter that I'm also watching. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, despite the grim news coming out of Latin America, I think we need to put things in perspective. Today's Wall Street Journal makes a point that I agree with, which is despite the impeachment of President Rousseff in Brazil, it seems unlikely at this point that she will actually be ousted from office. So you can expect her to return to her office sooner rather than later. With regard to Argentina and the election of President Macri, he made these noises during his campaign about trying to oust Venezuela from Mercosur, the regional trading bloc. But he's walked that back since then, not least because Venezuela has lent Argentina millions of dollars over the years that would then have to be paid back probably immediately if President Macri were to go forward with his concerns on Venezuela. And likewise, President Macri has decided to buck Washington on the question of China. China is still Argentina's one of Argentina's major trading partners. So I think that once again, we should not fall victim to the slant of the mainstream media in the United States, which tends to present a one-sided picture of trends and developments. A one-sided picture does not give a full picture of what is actually going on.
So we're kind of coming to the end of our time here, so I'm wondering if you have any other final thoughts on, you know, what you're watching, what's important as we just keep an eye domestically and internationally.
There's a movement in states like Texas, for example, which is guaranteed that Donald Trump will win, for progressive voters to vote for Jill Stein of the Green Party. I think in California, you see a similar sort of movement since Trump is almost guaranteed to lose California. So why waste your vote and why not cast it on favor of a left-wing party like the Green Party? That's something we're going to have to pay close attention to. And likewise, I think we have to pay close attention to Brexit. I mean, there are many wrinkles that are going to be emerging in coming weeks and months. But once again, this could be the game changer of all game changers.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Gerald Horn for joining me today. And we will definitely keep watching these issues and talk again. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And that will do it for us on the ground, onthegroundshow.org. Thanks again to Gerald Horn, to Chantel James, to Michael Byfield, to Floyd DJ Waheed Aaron, and thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows. Please don't forget to like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Radio Show. We have green letters that say On the Ground Radio Show. I'm Esther Avam. Raise your voice out there. Peace.